Your Notre Dame football weekend starts now on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Now your hosts, Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley.
Noon Friday, baby. We are rolling right along once again with Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. Glad you can join us as we get set to kick off another weekend of football here on WSBT. Notre Dame taking on North Carolina State tomorrow. Coming off a resounding, and I mean resounding is probably not even the way to put it, win over USC 49-14. How shocked were you,
Evan? Unbelievable. I mean, I didn't. I had Notre Dame winning, but not like that. But of course, if you turn the ball over three times, you don't protect the football.
Very true.
And what Notre Dame has been doing, I mean, they've been scoring touchdowns on these turnovers. It's, I mean, the pace that they're on right now offensively, when they're able to have the short field, they're not kicking field goals. I mean, they're scoring touchdowns. That's huge, and that's what you get.
And that's a big part of that is just having Brandon Wimbush back when they're in the red zone. Obviously, he scored two touchdowns. Yeah. He threw for two touchdowns, but his running ability has been so crucial. Look at all the way back to the Georgia game when he was able to sneak in there from a yard out when he got into the end zone. His ability to run the ball has just been huge when they're in the red zone.
Over under 16 rushing touchdowns.
I'm still going over. We did this earlier in the season on weekday sports beat. I'm sticking. I mean, even more so now because he's on 10,
right?
And he's got five games to go. And so he's averaging like what, a 1.5 a game, a little over 1.5 per game.
That's impressive.
Still on pace, 17, 18, right around there.
I think I'm right. I'm going over on this one too. I mean, he's just so dynamic, and especially in the red zone. You know, the one thing, I think this week is going to be a big test, and you got to look at the Miami defense too. But you know, Wake Forest. Navy, even Stanford, I think he's going to have success with his feet. I'm interested to see how this offensive line plays against NC State and Miami, the Miami speed. But, you know, NC State's done a great job of stopping the run. It's going to be a battle.
They're giving up just 91 yards a game, but Notre Dame is averaging over 315 yards per game on the ground.
Well, something's got to give. I mean, if you look at the rushing numbers, I've got a really cool website too. It's CFB Analytics, and you can compare the two teams percentage-wise, yards, all those different things, and it brings up all the stats. Red means you're towards the top, and if you look at Notre Dame's rush, like, everything's red.
Yeah.
And then if you go to the other side, you look at NC State, same thing with all of their rankings as far as, like, you know, rushing attempts per game. NC State's only allowing like 30. Notre Dame's rushing the ball about 45 times a game right now, but all the rush yards attempt, Notre Dame's like number one rush TDs a game. And then on the opposite side, you're seeing the same thing. Is it's all top numbers, top five, top 10 for NC State. So something's going to have to give here.
Which surprised, impressed, however you want to put it, which surprised you more? The defensive effort holding USC to 14 points or the offensive effort being able to put 49 on the board?
Defensive effort. I thought that even though I thought Notre Dame was going to win, I thought that the USC offense was going to have a little more success than they had.
I did too.
I mean, they made Sam Darnold look pedestrian. Ronald Jones, I mean, they weren't able to run the football. And that was my big key, was if USC was able to establish the run, it was going to take a lot of pressure off of Darnold. He'd be able to throw a little bit more. They weren't able to get anything going in the run game. And it was physical beats, and that was one thing that kind of on the USC, I know on the USC beat right now, that was one thing that was talked about with the offensive line coach. And he actually stopped his interview this past week. The media asking him, was it physical beats? What was it? And that's what it was like.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I saw that too. I mean, Notre Dame executed at a high level.
Yeah, we didn't get beat.
Yeah, we didn't get beat. That's why we didn't run for very many yards.
Who told you got beat? Well,
we watched the game.
Head coach said, Clay Helton said you got beat.
Right,
how about that?
yeah, got beat. So, you know, I thought, you know, right now the defense is playing with such high confidence. I think we use the word energy every week, and of course grit, energy and grit every week. But it's, I mean, that's, I've been, I'm continually impressed by what this defense has done.
I am too. And I mean, week in and week out, and we knew that Greer Martini was going to be gone last week. So in comes Tavon Coney.
He's got to start every week.
And on the very first play, man, tell you what, 11 tackles, which is the most for him, a career high, 11 tackles against USC. He's now the team's leading tackler with 53, two ahead of Niles Morgan, who's been leading the team all season. 4.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, 3 quarterback hurries this season.
Well, what happens too? I mean, I know Martini warmed up. He was in pads during warm-ups and then switched to a little less. I think he was only in a shell then when they came back out. But he was, I mean, you were looking at two guys that are sharing time, so you could combine those two stats and you say, hey, you have a buck linebacker and Tavon Coney that is pretty disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got to start, right?
I would think so.
Where does
Martini? We started against Carolina as well, even when Martini was healthy. But obviously, this is the most playing time he's had all year.
Right, consistently, yeah. So, I mean, I think he's got to be on the field, especially after what he did this week.
And I agree.
With a big game coming up.
And there's some matchups with NC State specifically that he and Drew Tranquil are going to have to
Jalen
be in there.
Samuels is a guy, you know, he's a handful, and NC State likes to move him around. I think even last year, they list him as a tight end, I think, his position. I mean, he's obviously not a tight end. He's a slot receiver.
Mm-hmm.
But they use him in so many different ways. He's very dangerous. What they're going to try to do is create mismatches within personnel packages and then motions and formations, trying to get him matched up with, you know, a bigger body linebacker or even like a cover down safety like Drew Tranquil, who probably is best suited as a run defender in the box.
So, again, I think between Tranquil and Coney, those are going to be some guys who are going to have to be dedicated to him. Not dedicated, just depending on where he lines up and all that kind of stuff. But here's Brian Kelly talking about Tavon Coney this week.
I think that's the trust factor in the coaching. I think, you know, it's like anything else. He's trusting the teaching, and I think that trust is starting to show itself on the field. A couple of weeks earlier, you know, there were some clips when we were in a defensive meeting where, you know, and we hear this all the time, right? You know, the defensive line's getting pushed off the ball. Well, generally, if you're getting pushed off the ball, it's because linebackers are allowing double teams to occur. Our backers are attacking the line of scrimmage and getting those double teams to disengage. And now it's single blocks because our linebackers are really attacking. And I think Clark Lee's done a great job of teaching how to be part of that front and fit. And quite frankly, Tavon's done a great job of trusting his teaching.
And I mean, you talk about trusting and everything coming into play, the very first USC play from scrimmage. Now, it was a high snap, obviously. How big a factor when we talk about all this different stuff was Tavon Coney getting to Darnold on that very first play, strip sack, fumble.
Set the tone.
Yeah.
It almost was like the game was over after that when Notre Dame's offense then cashes in. I mean, it was kind of a runaway train. And then once you get Josh Adams and Brandon Winbush going on the ground, USC was almost looking for a reason to not want to play.
It kind of seemed like it
at times. You could see it early. You could see it on the sideline. You could see it in the guys, their body language, their demeanor. It was, they, you know, and I know it was a simple play, but it kind of characterized, or it was kind of the epitome of the entire game. There was a punt late in the game. And USC was in position to down it at the 1 yard line, and somehow with 4 guys around, they let it go into the end zone, and it was a touchback. I just kind of felt like that was kind of the USC mentality. The whole game was lack of execution, not great energy level, almost like they were looking for something to go wrong. And when you're looking for something, it's going to go wrong, and it did. And Notre Dame was able to capitalize.
It was the complete reverse when you're role reversal. From some of those Notre Dame USC matchups we saw, like when Pete Carroll was there, just the way things.
Look last year.
Yeah, that's true.
Look last year, you know,
a lot different energy.
Even on the sideline last year at USC, and I was there for that game. It was a lot of the same. I mean, it was a sinking ship,
yeah.
and it was sinking fast. Now, I don't think USC, you know, they're necessarily looking at it as a sinking ship right now, but it was the same type of body language, the same type of lack of energy and enthusiasm, and it just, you know, it just wasn't there. And It was there for Notre Dame. It was there.
Let me ask you this now, because, okay, so Coney creates the, he gets the sack, creates the fumble, recovers the fumble, the whole thing. Notre Dame has the ball, and then just a few plays later, boom. You got Brandon Wimbush to EQ St. Brown, then the next possession to Kevin Stefferson. When you talk about
I thought Stefferson, he's eligible now.
Yeah, I know, okay. Right?
He's able to play? All right.
He is? Trades are in order?
We're good.
Yep. Good along those lines. So two touchdown passes before anything ever happens. Now, Wimbush did not have a great overall day passing, but when you, again, look at the tone of how everything went after that, how important was it that Wimbush's first two completions go for touchdowns, and then everything else just kind of seemed like an avalanche after that?
We keep seeing glimpses of what Brandon can do throwing the football. He was in rhythm. He was on time. He made a quick, decisive read and got the ball to his playmakers. You see a back shoulder throw to Stefferson? No, not many people are going to defend that.
Which he said was, it looked like one of the best passes I've seen him throw, but he told me after the game when I interviewed him for the postgame show that it didn't even feel good coming out of his hand.
you put it on the radius of the receiver to make sure that, you know, it's kind of in that area. And listen, you sometimes gotta feel good when it looks bad or feels bad. It's not every throw is not going to be perfect.
Perfect is the enemy of good.
Yeah.
Good enough sometimes. I mean, as a quarterback, maybe is he wanting everything to be a little too perfect?
I threw some great interceptions that were perfect spirals.
They look good coming out of your hand.
A lot of spin, a lot of zip. Uh-huh. You know, that laser rocket arm, it just didn't go to the right place where I made the wrong read. All right, so, and I mean, you look at other guys. You've got pressure in your face. And one good example, probably later in his career too. You know, I don't remember Peyton Manning throwing too many spirals to finish off his career. But guess what? He was putting them where they needed to go. I don't know if they felt good for him. You know, I know he had a surgery. You know, but what I'm saying, you know, what we're saying here is it's okay. Just get it in the vicinity and get it there on time.
Right, and I mean, he did with those first couple of passes anyway, and it was all, again, the avalanche effect after that. Notre Dame runs for 377 yards to USC 76.
I think that opened, it had to have opened up from a defensive perspective. USC's like, okay, well, they're going to
back off a little bit.
We're not going to be able to load the box because, you know, that really was my mindset. If I'm an opposing team and I'm saying, where is Notre Dame right now not shown consistency? They have not shown consistency throwing the football. Boom. Two touchdown passes early. What are we going to do now? It'd be like in baseball, you have a pitcher who's throwing, you know, he's throwing away, 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 and then they hit an opposite field home run. Mm-hmm. Well, what am I going to do now? I'm going to go in, and he still hits me there too, right? Now it was right up Notre Dame's alley. They're going to open up the floodgates. You got Quentin Nelson just mauling people, and that offensive line gets rolling. You got Josh Adams, a big night, three touchdowns.
191 yards.
And the Heisman campaign has now started.
Boom. Hashtag 33 trucking.
Yeah, I don't know about that. What are your thoughts on that one?
I'm not really sure where that. Yeah.
I think we can do better.
33. Even if it was Adams trucking.
Yeah. Or Adams for Heisman. Why not just. We can't keep it.
Keep it simple?
Yeah. Although I've been on board, and there's some small rumblings on the Twitter sphere right now of getting Quentin Nelson.
You and Darren.
I'm on board for this.
that's the Twitter rumblings right now.
I am
now,
on
right?
board for this. I am all Darren and I are all for this now.
He is. If you had to put Quentin Nelson, Josh Adams, is Quentin Nelson the best player on Notre Dame's offense right now?
I'd vote for him.
I would vote for him for Outland.
Okay.
For Lombardi.
All right.
No doubt. It's a little tough, though.
It is. Well, I remember growing up.
I mean, that would be a campaign if you're trying to get an offensive lineman for Heisman.
The last time I remember, Orlando Pace for Ohio State, they really made a push for, that was when I can't remember how old I was. I was like, ooh, pancake. Right? I mean, you know, and
Quentin Nelson has a few of those.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he's doing some amazing things. And like for his, you know, his size, you know, the mobility that he has, the speed, obviously now it's, you know, it's coming together as far as the vision and the execution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see his pass blocking stats, very, very consistent. And certainly it's different than playing, you know, a right or a left tackle. You're not being taxed as much from the edge. But he's been cleaning up some mistakes for other guys too, and he's been very dominant.
There's the one that you talked about Twitter that I saw from the Georgia game where he's obviously the left guard, and he comes across in front of Wimbush, who's back there, and he cleans the clock of a guy coming from the other side.
He has a one-on-one in the back side. Uh-huh. And so then it was a double team between Mustafa and Bars, and they have that kind of all set up. And what happened is they brought extra pressure from the strong side. So you have this wide gap, two edge rushers, both tackles are high, and there's this clean space for, you know, a secondary rusher to come in. And man, he flies over there and knocks the guy down. That's pretty.
And that's not the only time it's happened. There have been some others of those that you've seen this year too, where he's done almost the exact same thing. Where he comes back, it's like he's got eyes in the back of his head. And he's picking up somebody from the other side of the play. Just really, really impressive. If you're gonna try to promote an offensive lineman, especially a guard, because he's not even the premium guy. He's a guard. He's not even a tackle. I mean, you've got to have those kind of highlights. You've got to have the video to say, this is what this guy is doing. Because there just aren't enough stats to back up an offensive lineman.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the quarterback position and the running back position, you can rack up tons of stats, and that's what these guys are doing, and that's why, you know, that's why they're getting the publicity. But it's great to see Josh finally get that publicity after a huge game in primetime. And we talked about this on the show last week. You know, why wasn't he in there? I don't know. Now he is, and now he's got another opportunity this week.
That's right.
Bryce Love didn't play last night.
Yeah.
Right. So you've got
Stanford barely won.
And Barkley for me still is the number one guy. Just what he's done as far as, you know, you have to take into consideration. He's also, you know, 500, 600 yards receiving and a few touchdowns through the air too. So he's doing some other things catching the football. But certainly what Adams has done has been explosive. Is that a good word? Explosive?
I think that'd be one way to put it.
Yeah.
A very good way to put it. I mean, he does. He explodes.
You have to pay attention. It's just kind of like chip, and then
he shot out of a rocket.
80-yard touchdown.
I think if Quentin Nelson really wants to get in the Heisman race, that video of him from when he committed to Notre Dame, have you seen that one?
That's
what needs to be distributed. He's got the shades on. He's got this leather vest. It looks like sleeveless, no shirt underneath.
Pretty good.
And
for a commit video?
Yeah.
Not bad.
For an offensive lineman, too.
Well, that's the thing is most offensive linemen, it's, you know, they call Coach Heistand and say, hey, I'm committing. And that's about it.
Uh-huh.
There's no flash. I think Parker Boudreaux, the 2 years ago, pulled the bus.
Right.
I thought maybe that was a bit much. But this, you know, I think
bus could be on Quentin Nelson's back.
Well, yeah, it could.
Right now it could anyway.
I do like this video. It is. I think it's right up.
It's pretty quality.
That could be the centerpiece of a Heisman campaign.
I think so. You start with that. You kind of intersperse it throughout with pancake blocks and picking up backside blockers and everything else. 12:18, Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Hashtag 33 trucking, though. Josh Adams. That is the hashtag 33 trucking that Notre Dame football is using to push him. And just the one video that I saw last night and this morning that they have out, 6.3 rush yards after contact, leads the nation. 6 rushes of 60-plus yards, leads the nation. His touchdowns and rush yards versus ranked opponents, leads the nation. So that's a pretty good starting point right there. Yeah, if you're gonna be pushing him.
That, right?
Right. 967 yards, ranked 7th in the nation. And, of course, he's missed 9 quarters of play. That's probably what's hurting him. And there's nothing you can do about a bad ankle, but that's probably what's hurting him more than anything, because on his average, 9 quarters of play is obviously a little bit more than 2 games. He'd be sitting there neck and neck with Bryce Love
now. Well, I think, you know, you've heard the argument both ways. Well, he hasn't played in that many quarters.
Right.
Well, why didn't he play in that many quarters? Right. So, I think it works. It probably could work for or against him saying, well, what if, right? What if he had played in those? What was his stats look like? But you could say, well,
he's averaging 138 yards a game, so that's 270 some, almost right around 300 extra yards he'd have right now, assuming he's keeping that pace.
He'd be right there.
Yeah. I mean, doing pretty well as it is. 138.1 yards per game, sixth in the nation, 9.61 yards per carry, second only to Bryce Love, who's averaging 10.2. And then he's also first in the college. That was a different note that I had.
Well,
I started reading something else there.
What I was maybe most impressed with, though, in this game, did you see the referee? Did you see the referee on the 80-yard touchdown?
I don't think I did.
Man, he turned his hips and ran pretty well. almost caught Josh Adams.
Almost caught him?
Yeah.
50 or so yards behind. He almost, if he had 200 more yards, he might have caught him.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. Yeah, so 33 trucking. We might have to start something on social media here, see if we can come up with maybe something a little more catchy.
Yeah. But the Heisman campaign is on.
It's on.
In any case, hashtag 33 trucking.
Yeah.
Baker
Mayfield,
like a highway road sign.
Barkley's going to be the guy to beat in my mind.
You think even ahead of Bryce Love, if Bryce Love leads the nation doing what he's doing now?
Look what Penn State's doing right now. Well,
that's true, too.
They play Ohio State.
Big one coming up, yeah.
Yeah, and with Notre Dame and NC State, you have two really marquee matchups for both teams against quality opponents, quality defenses. You know, if they can get it done, you know, Penn State has a pretty tough schedule. You know, and if he can do that through the Big Ten, you know, you're certainly gonna get some love.
Let me ask you this on the Josh Adams thing. We saw something new, a little wrinkle last week that we hadn't been able to see really this year. That's the two back set.
I've been waiting for it.
And it's, I mean,
I saw it in camp a little bit.
Yeah, we saw it just a little bit, right. But because of these ankles between Tony Jones, right. Dexter Williams, we haven't seen as much of it. But it looked good last week, and Brian Kelly was asked about that on Sunday, the day after the USC game.
Tony provides us another dimension, especially as a blocker. And as a pass catcher, you know, he's a big kid, he's physical, and Josh obviously is a big physical kid too. We just think with, you know, two guys that are closing in on 220 pounds in that split set, it's a pretty imposing backfield, and gives us another wrinkle within our offense. But as you know, Tony has not been healthy. We feel like he's back at that level where we can feature that formation. That formation can be broken out, and Tony can be a slot receiver in it, which, again, we feel really good about his ability to impact the passing game as well. So expect to see more of it.
And I think it makes it, when you've got Adams on one side, Jones on the other, and then, oh, by the way, Brandon Wimbush, who could be a 1,000-yard rusher. I mean, so that's some ability you've got, and it makes it hard to key on anybody back
just
there.
Just put one more running back and bring back the four horsemen.
You might as well, right?
All four back there. You can snap it to whichever guy you want. I don't want to see that. But, yeah, I mean, so what it does, if you sub in an extra running back, defenses are going to be forced to go to a bigger personnel package. We're talking maybe an extra linebacker. It could be taking a defensive back off the field. And if you have a guy like Tony Jones, who, man, the last couple of weeks, I've never seen him run as hard as he has.
Yeah.
I mean, Autry Denson has to be just in heaven with the group of running backs that he has. You know, that he's kind of earmarked, recruited, and now the atmosphere, the competitiveness that they have in practice. They've got three, four, five really good running backs. They continue to recruit well with the running back position too. And if you couple that with what this offensive line is doing, I think you have an identity, which really over the past few years maybe has been missing. You know, is Notre Dame a shotgun spread, throw it all over the field? Are they a run first team? Why not embrace that, you know, hard-nosed, tough mentality of downhill running with really good running backs, a mobile athletic quarterback, and good running backs? But in these two-back sets, you really put the defense in a lot of pressure. Both backs can block. They do a nice job in the passing game.
Right.
And now you have three guys to be, you know, to be worried about as far as running goes, or, which I like to see too, you have a pass option now, and I'm going to take Tony Jones in space against most linebackers.
No, absolutely. And, I mean, he got the, like you were talking about, he ran like he hasn't run all year. How much of it is just him being healthy, and how much is because, again, you've got Josh Adams back there as well, and defenses have to think about that.
It's both. I mean, when you're feeling 100% confident, no injuries, ankles feeling good, right, you have no hesitation to put your foot in the ground and make some cuts and get going north and south. But you have a Heisman candidate in the backfield. Sure, a defense is probably going to be prime, you know, looking for him. But bottom line, this offensive lineup, I mean, since the Georgia game, I think they've just gotten better and better and better. And if you look at, you know, right tackle, that was a big question in the fall and then leading into the season. And there were some growing pains. Mm-hmm. But I've been pretty impressed with the rotation that they developed, and then really now the cohesion within the whole offensive line. Every game I've been, you know, the Miami of Ohio game was, I mean, it was the cleanest pocket I had seen. And then you continue to build off of that, and I mean, it's amazing how many 300-yard games they put together. I mean, yes, Adams is getting a lot of the publicity, but when he wasn't playing, you know, Deion McIntosh had a big game. There was a while early in the season we were saying, why isn't Dexter Williams playing more? That conversation has kind of died down a little bit.
Well,
and he hasn't been healthy either.
Right.
But when these other guys have gone in, they've produced as well. And that's a huge credit to this offensive line and what they're doing.
The Tony Jones Jr. that we saw Saturday, though, is why everyone was so high on him coming out of training camp, because of the things that we saw.
He probably had the highest stock for me on the offensive side.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
It's spring, too. He had a really good spring.
The highest upside, you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, he probably did the most from last year to put himself in a position to be on the field. And that's saying a lot when you have two really good running backs in front of you. He was pushing to be on the field, you know, even in the spring, in my mind.
Full day of football tomorrow on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, 9 a.m. It's the Jack Swarbrick Show. 10 o'clock, it is the Brian Kelly Show. At 11 a.m., it is game day with Evan Sharpley at Ivy Court Inn and Suites. The guests this week are Tom Gatewood.
Yeah, Tom Gatewood will be there. And, hey, we've got great barbecue, and it's going to be cold tomorrow.
That's true.
Right? Come out and eat some of this barbecue from Fisher's Tips and Chips, because I can't keep eating it myself. I bet
Tim Growl helps you out, though, right?
I might be up to that.
And Jeremy?
I might be up to that 230 range now, so if I needed to play running back... I understand the pass blocking schemes, right?
Uh-huh.
I just don't know if I'm as explosive as those guys.
Not quite there. All right. So Tom Gatewood will be there. Len Clark will be there as well.
Yeah, talking a couple of his projects that he's got going on. And then we always have, you know, other players will show up. We might book a guest, you know, 10 or 15 minutes before. But the tailgate's awesome. We're over at Ivy Cordon and Suites. Usually live music going on. And as the weather gets colder... the food tastes better.
The food gets even better.
That's
right.
There's a lot of things going on, so we'd love for people to stop on out.
Stop by. The show is from 11 until noon. Ivy Court Inn and Suites, Fishers, Tips and Chips Barbecue. Then at noon, Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, and I. The IMG pregame begins at 2:30, and then, of course, the game is at 3:41 this week. 3:41. That's right. Will be done by the time they started last week, right? The post-game show, Darren and Reggie Brooks. I'll have player interviews from down on the field as well afterwards. That is all tomorrow.
And I'll be on Twitter.
There you go.
Updating people on what's going on and all my thoughts.
That's right. With the Twitter updates. I'll be watching your Twitter feed closer, and
Although tomorrow might be...
I'll get in your mentions there.
Tomorrow might be an orchard day if it's warm enough with my daughter and my wife.
Ooh.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
All right.
We'll see what the boss, my four-month-old, has to say, what she wants.
They do drive the bus. Well, any trick-or-treating?
Yes, yeah.
You are going to do that?
We are going to do that. She's going to be Princess Leia.
Nice.
And I'm going to be Darth Vader.
Ooh.
Yeah. We got the little like crocheted hat, so it'll look like the same hair that Princess Leia has in all the Star Wars movies.
All right. Take a break. When we come back, any hangover effect from USC heading into NC State? That and a little coaching philosophy talk. We've got that and more still to come here as we look toward Notre Dame and NC State tomorrow, the 6th-ranked rushing defense against the sixth-ranked rushing offense in the nation, butting heads tomorrow afternoon at Notre Dame Stadium right here on WSBT.
Because our mission from day one is to win a national championship. So you guys are just catching up to us. So, you know, whatever's being said and has been said has been what our mission has been from day one. Look, you know, USC lost the game and they went home. They get to play for the Pac-12 championship. I mean, that's great. We don't have anything else to play for. We've been in the playoffs since we lost to Georgia. Every game's a playoff for us. So, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, getting to the playoffs. Every game we play is a playoff game. So our guys don't know it any other way. Everybody else seems to have caught on with this idea that Notre Dame is playing for a playoff spot. We don't have anything else to play for. That's what we play for. We're an independent football team, and our mission is to graduate all of our players and play for a national championship. That's all we have. So it's not really any different than it was yesterday or the day before or last week.
Brian Kelly, the head coach of the Fighting Irish. 12:34, Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT. And he was asked about staying focused after such a resounding win over USC. And now you've got NC State, a good team, but not a rival coming in here. Do you see any chance for a letdown for the Irish tomorrow?
No. But you know, every week is a single elimination tournament right now. I was talking with Team Doc Brian Radigan. That's exactly how I phrased it to him. I go, It's a great way as a player or a former player like myself. That's how you want to play. You want to play. You're going to have a little chip on your shoulder. It's almost like your back is up against the wall because you know there's a little bit of pressure. You know, one more loss and that playoff picture is gone.
Right.
So every week is the most important game. Now, that's coach speak. The coaches are going to say those things till the cows come home. It's got to resonate with the players, knowing that if they do not go and execute at a high level, your one of your two goals then you cannot accomplish. The other goal is, you know, it's abroad. We want to graduate everyone. The one goal that you have on the field is to win a national championship. You know that you have to win every week now.
And you're in that picture. Yeah, that's right. The only loss is a quality loss to an undefeated Georgia team.
The hard part is when that picture or that goal is gone, and that's what you saw happen last year.
And that's what I was going to say. If they had two losses right now as opposed to just the one and what's in front of them, I think then it would be tougher.
Yeah, I mean, like USC, they have their second loss, but they're going back to play for the Pac-10 championship now. Yes, they still have that. Notre Dame does not. And, you know, what would be really interesting to see is if Notre Dame still wins out, which I think the resume would warrant being in the college football playoffs, but if they were to go 11-1 and not make it, the immediate conversation then has to be what conference can we join right away?
Right.
The AAC.
And that would be sort of the tipping point. And that's kind of why the informal arrangement with the ACC is there. I mean, they've said that all along, that it is there so that it is in place, so that if it does come to the point where Notre Dame needs to join a conference, they have one leg in already.
I think it's helpful if you have a conference championship under your belt. You know, it gives you a little bit more wiggle room. You can say that you want it even if you have a loss or two losses.
But there are already people, and you hear it little bits and pieces week to week. Oh, this is why Notre Dame needs to be in a conference right now. Well, nothing has happened right now that has kept Notre Dame out. It's not until you would fall into that situation where you do get left out where you need it. I mean, it's still a great situation for them right now. We're going to find out on Tuesday when the first college football playoff rankings come out exactly where they stand. And I've got to think, if they beat NC State tomorrow, no worse than 7th or 8th, I would think.
Really good resume then.
Yeah.
You know, your one, Michigan State has been on an upward trend. And really, most of the other teams so far that Notre Dame has beat have been doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
Boston College, right?
Yeah, scored 40-plus points the last 2 weeks.
Georgia, obviously. I mean, that's that.
Averaging almost 38 points a game with the exception of... that's right.
So the resume is going to be there. There's other opportunities the rest of the season to improve on that resume. You know, it's not, you're not having the conversation of we had a front-loaded schedule and we've already played all of our big games. It's, we have a kind of a almost a back-loaded schedule to talk about that is, all right, you beat NC State, you beat Miami, you beat Stanford. Okay.
And everyone knows about their schedule, too, because that's what everyone's been talking about really since after the win over North Carolina. When you look at Notre Dame, they've got the second toughest schedule. If they run that schedule, there's no doubt they should be in the top four.
And brand recognition.
The bigger question. Yeah, that's it's a factor, too, but that's the bigger question. Can they run it? If they do, they should be there.
I would say yes.
I agree. All right, let's take a timeout. There was something that I wanted to get to, and we always kind of shortchange ourselves at the end of the show. So I'm going to take a break now. And this is related to a lot of different things. We had Joe Girardi get fired yesterday. And some of the, well, and some of the reasons given that I've read some of the articles there and listened to some of the stuff. There's a growing trend, maybe especially in baseball, but it pertains to Notre Dame here as well. So I've got some different sound bites that I want to get to and kind of get your take on it as a former, a guy who's played both sports and been in the locker rooms and the clubhouse and been around kids these days and that kind of thing. So we'll get your thoughts on some of that, the growing trend in, again, especially baseball, relating to the younger player is one of the things given. So we're going to talk about that after we take this time out. It is 12:40, Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. We are coming up on 12:59, winding down the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Notre Dame and NC State kicks off at 3:41 tomorrow here on 96.1 FM. Evan, your prediction for tomorrow?
Man, I know I'm going to catch some flack for this, but I've got NC State winning this game. I think it's going to be close.
Okay.
I've kind of gone back and forth. Where I'm uncertain right now is Notre Dame's defense has done such a nice job of taking the football away.
Mm-hmm.
And then Notre Dame's offense turning that into points.
Right.
NC State does not turn the football over.
That is correct.
Three all year.
Two of them in their season opening loss to South Carolina. They've taken care of it since then.
So if Notre Dame is able to get one turnover, I'll take the Irish. If not, I think it's 27-24.
We kind of hit that on, I'm sorry, say your score
27-24.
27-24, Wolfpack. Yeah. All right. I'm going to go Notre Dame. We were talking yesterday, I think if Notre Dame can force a couple turnovers, if they win the turnover battle, it results in a win.
I'm with you there.
If they can have a positive turnover position. All right, that's coming up tomorrow. Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, W.